If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at osirispod.com to stay in the loop. Relix Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relix.com. The show starts now.
Lord, you can see that it's true.
What a terrific take on the Grateful Dead classic, They Love Each Other, from Roots of Creation, featuring Haley Jane. The track is actually part of an entire collection of Grateful Dead songs on Grateful Dub, a 12-song reggae-infused tribute to the Grateful Dead. If you aren't familiar with Roots of Creation, they are a reggae rock outfit in the vein of Sublime or Dirty Heads, so indeed a Grateful Dead tribute, while a reggae one, is a touch far-fetched for the genre. This one really does sound terrific, though. I recently caught up with Brett Wilson, frontman of Roots of Creation, to talk about the project and its inspiration. Our conversation started when I asked about the timing around this tribute.
It was kind of like a slow, organic process. The record was kind of a seed in all of our brains for many years. Probably since I picked up a guitar, pretty much. I'm 36, so when I was about 11 or 12, I picked up a guitar. I was into kind of like punk rock and metal and starting to get into jam music, and got turned on to the Grateful Dead by a couple of live bootlegs that my friend gave me. And I started collecting their tapes and Fish tapes and, jam tapes in general, and started to learn how to play guitar by, rewinding and fast forwarding the Dead bootlegs. Just really dug Jerry's guitar style. So that was kind of like the beginning of the inception of me playing guitar. And then there was a reggae tribute that came out, because I was really into reggae music eventually after listening to, punk rock and ska punk and hearing where the reggae influences came from. And one of my mom's friends used to make me reggae mixtapes. And, so I kind of eventually got into actual, straight up reggae, not like reggae fusion stuff. And So I was excited about this reggae tribute to the Grateful Dead that came out, but it was the tones on it were very 90s, and a lot of the artists said, hey, I wasn't a fan of the Dead, but it sounded cool and I liked the songs or whatever. And it just seemed, I don't know if it was a money grab or something, but I was so excited for it. And then when I bought the CD, obviously at that point in time, you couldn't hear the CD before you purchased it. I was super disappointed. So I was like, man, someday I'd love to make a, record like this and actually do it the way that I envision it.
Yeah, it's true.
So fast forward.
I was just going to comment on that. I think the only two tracks on that first one, I mean, there's two volumes, but the only tracks on that stand out for me were the Catfish John by Toots and I think is it Steel Pulse doing the Franklin's Tower? I think those are the only two real standouts for me anyway. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's cool. I should actually go back and listen to that because maybe we can find some inspiration in terms of, playing in a live setting. We have this record and stuff, but we really need two sets of material sometimes. Because the Grateful Dead, obviously, is a two-set band,
Right.
So,
sorry to interrupt,
No, it's all good. I don't know if Burning Spear's Estimated Profit was on there or on a different record, but I do like that version. I do like the Burning Spear Estimated Profit.
I think he just did that on his own. I don't think he did that specifically on either of those records.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, me
and,
too.
I was reading the other day that he did some sort of a song afterwards called Jerry's Song or something like that. So I got to check that out. He did like a song as a tribute to Jerry.
Oh, cool.
Because of the response he got from doing Estimated Profit and having the Deadheads kind of come check him out afterwards. So after Jerry passed. So I got to investigate that a little bit, but yeah, going back to your initial question, after that, kind of started the band, like you said, doing original reggae rock and jam music. My concept was to, take my love of the band Sublime, which had like every type of music that I loved when I heard them. I was like, man, this is like everything I love, 80s and 90s dance hall, you know, obviously they did Scarlet Begonias. They had a jam influence. They had the rock. They had the punk. They had everything. And hip hop, you know, was the conscious hip hop influence. So I loved that band, but I was like, man, the lyrics are a little dark for me. If I started a band, I'd like to inject some positivity. You know, not that Bradley wasn't positive, but a little bit more positivity into the situation, a little bit more, you know, what I was envisioning, and then a lot more jamming and, you know, some other music. So that was kind of my initial vision with the band. And we started out as a party band and eventually, you know, started moving to clubs and sold out our first couple shows because the people that went to the parties went to the shows and we were like, man. So we moved into a house together, got a van and just, you know, hit the road. Fast forward to maybe around 2010 or so, there was this festival called Jerry Jam that, you know, just started the year after Jerry died. And our friend Dan Webb, who started the festival, the first year was just him and his friends watching, you know, Grateful Dead material on a screen, and just kind of celebrating Jerry's life. And then he got some Dead cover bands the next year, and it slowly organically grew. And we played basically the first festival where they actually got a, you know, quote unquote, you know, headliner, not just like his friends or whatever. So we started to mix in a little bit of extra Dead material, you know, in celebration of what the experience was. We became really good friends. And always when we did the Dead material or any covers, we typically do it our own way in a reggae rock style. So it just kind of organically started to come back into the fold in terms of, you know, our rotation of material. And then fast forward a little more, as we became friends, he had us do a Halloween show. And in the jam scene, a lot of times with Halloween shows, you'll do a musical costume. So we did a whole set of Grateful Dead material. And my dear friend, John Phillips, who's the co-producer on the record, had this term Grateful Dub he had been throwing around. So we were calling it the Grateful Dub because I was inspired by him. And so we did a whole set for Halloween. And then we eventually played the Jerry Jam Festival a couple more times, one time with Melvin Seals and Zach Nugent from JGB. And Melvin had originally, you know, been on our last record because we met there a couple years prior on our song Struggle off Living Free. And I told him about the project and he was like, oh, I'm way down. I had a blast recording with you guys. You have a great sound. You know, he'd become a good friend. So, you know, and also our trombone player was like adamant that he was like, man, he plays in Real Big Fish. And, you know, obviously they do a lot of, you know, different ska versions of songs. He's like, this is going to be great, man. People are going to love it. And we were focused on our original material. He's like, we got to do this. We got to do this. So that's where the idea was born. It was kind of like a organic process, you know, as a seed idea, and then, you know, grew into actually making it and coming to fruition.
Well, it's a great story. And, you know, it's timely because there are so many. It just seems to be, certainly since Fare Thee Well and maybe the last, you know, 5 years, there seems to be a resurgence of Grateful Dead music, whether it's tribute bands or cover bands or even Bobby with Dead and Company or Phil and Friends. There seems to be a real resurgence. Dark Star Orchestra, Joe Russo's Almost Dead. There seems to be a real resurgence in the Grateful Dead music. And particularly from, you know, not just the people who've spent 50 years listening to this music, but people your age and younger, people my age. I'm just a little bit older than you, but that are all finding this music again or still holding on to this music. Is it the music? Is it the community? What specifically is drawing us back to the Grateful Dead?
Man, I don't know. I mean, to me, they're almost like the American band. I mean, for me, there's nothing more, kind of really more American than the Grateful Dead. So for me, it makes a lot of sense in terms of, you know, their mix of Americana and psychedelia and jazz and blues and folk. I mean, you don't really get much more, you know, American music than their fusion of styles. And also the way that they bring people together in the community. And I know they were pretty adamant about, you know, staying out of politics and that kind of stuff, you know, where a lot of the 60s bands kind of took sides and things, you know, which was cool and, you know, standing up for what they believe in. But the Dead really kind of stayed on track in terms of not alienating anybody. So it's, to me, it's, you know, in a lyrical mentality, kind of pretty populist in terms of, you know, being able to have people identify with them. And I think, like you said, the Fairly Be Well shows, you know, I think that was like one of the, I think that was the highest grossing pay-per-view concert of all time. I mean, they're just, they had such an underground following, and then so many of those people went on to have major careers after following the Dead, you know, being lawyers or maintaining those careers while they were on tour, you know, whatever story it is. Then they had children, then they had the children listening to the Dead. I mean, my father-in-law, I never got to see Jerry play. I had one chance to see him play at Highgate in Vermont. And I was like, no, I'll catch him next time. I was at band practice, you know, with a high school band. I just remember, like, after he passed away, just, like, crying my eyes out listening to Bootleg. Like, why didn't I go? But a lot of my friends were like, it wasn't a good experience. There's gate crashers and so on and so forth. But, you know, I just think the music is timeless. I mean, we were talking last night about, you know, Hunter's lyrics and how amazing it is for them to have a lyricist and then just focus on the music, because there was quite a freeing experience for us to, typically you live in a lot of self-doubt when you're recording an album. You're like, is this good? Is this, you know, is this part good? Should we do a different intro, this or that? You know, we weren't worrying about that with these songs. These songs are so classic. They're so timeless. They're so perfect in their imperfection sometimes, but also just in their, there's just kind of like a genuine, soulful, extremely humble quality to the music as well, you know? And so, yeah, that was one of the best parts about making the record, was we didn't have to worry about that. We had to worry about, you know, how do we arrange the song? How do we translate this with our voice? But you're not writing a song, because the song is already timeless. It's already you know, perfection, you know?
So there are 12 tracks on the record. How did you guys choose the, I mean, these are all classic Grateful Dead songs, and I think all of them are classic Jerry Robert Hunter songs. How did you choose these 12 songs to put down on tape?
Yeah, I actually felt bad about that afterwards, because we're playing Bobby's venue, like Sweetwater Music Hall, and I was like, man. And then I went to go see Bobby and Phil with my buddy John Phillips, the co-producer of the record and owners Controlled Substance Sound Labs, who jointly released the record with us. And he was like, come out, man. It was like in the middle of a snowstorm. He was like, come out. I got free tickets to go see Phil and Bobby. I'm out here from L.A. You know, Shapiro was throwing the show, who threw the Fairly Well shows and who owns Brooklyn Bowl. And he's like, you got to come. It's going to be great. You know, you might be able to meet the guys. And it was an awesome performance. And, you know, the greatest part that, you know, I feel like sums up the Grateful Dead experience is the show was awesome. It felt like you were at a rehearsal space. They're in there doing the duo thing. And then for the encore, they do Touch of Grey, and they just absolutely butcher the song. I mean, they weren't in the right time. They were singing in the wrong key. The chords were off. I mean, and then they stopped three quarters through the song, put their instruments down, looked at each other, shrugged, looked at the audience, shrugged, smiled, said thank you, waved, and they got a standing ovation. I mean, they got a standing ovation because the audience just really appreciates any kind of the authenticity of the concert performance and the connection, you know, that they can laugh along with that, you know, whether it's transcending, you know, music and having an amazing experience, or just completely butchering something and owning up to it, not pretending like it didn't happen, you know? So, you know, I felt really bad about that I didn't have any Bobby songs on there, but it really had to do with the songs that I knew and sang most of my life, where I could knew I could arrange and sing them properly, you know, from playing, you know, I do little gigs when I'm not on the road with the band, playing in the corner at a pub, just jamming out to keep my my game fresh and support my family. And, you know, a lot of these songs were those songs. And just, I identify with a lot of the Hunter Garcia songs a little bit more. And the Bobby songs, you know, when we tried to tackle a couple of them, were just a little bit more difficult to rearrange, a little bit more, I guess, less classic song forms in a sense. So that's kind of the, you know, the choice in terms of why there's so much Garcia Hunter material. Yeah. And it just, these were the songs that I knew I could sing the best. And I thought that we should lead with the strongest material, where we felt the most comfortable with it.
Yeah, and they are. It's a great collection of songs. And what's really cool is, you know, I played it. I was driving around last night, and my mom was in the car, and she, you know, she's known about the Grateful Dead, and certainly has heard Grateful Dead music before. But she said to me, and I thought this was really crazy, she said, "Wow, this is way more fun than just listening to the Grateful Dead. I'm going to check this out on Spotify," which, by the way, is pretty cool when, you know, she had never wanted to check out the Grateful Dead before, but I think she heard They Love Each Other and Friend of the Devil, and she was like, "Yeah, I'm going to check this out on my own." And she actually had me write it down so that she could check it out later. So, do you think you're going to attract?
First of all, I think that's amazing that your mom listens to Spotify and is that hip. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, you know, she's almost 70, and she's listened to the Grateful Dead for, you know, 30 years, but never before has she been so intrigued by it. So I'm curious if you think this record is going to turn Roots of Creation fans onto the Dead, or just reggae fans onto the Dead, now that you've released this record?
I definitely think so, and I've seen it, you know, in our audience, you know, embracing these songs. You know, there's definitely some crossover of people that are, you know, my age that come out to our shows that, you know, grew up listening to these songs, and maybe afterwards they kind of went in the direction of the reggae rock scene. But, you know, they remember being teenagers, you know, sparking up a joint or taking a hike and dropping a couple tabs into the woods and listening to the Dead, or whatever it was that was part of their, like, teenage experience, or, you know, college experience, or whatever it was. So it brings them back to that in a reimagined form. And then definitely there were some fans, you know, this was a crowdfunded record in a sense, you know, like a pre-order campaign with Pledge Music. And I was a little bit concerned, just because it wasn't original material, would all our fans rally behind it, you know? But they trusted in us that, you know, to deliver them something that they would be proud of being a part of. And, you know, everybody seems really stoked on it. Even people that like your mom's comment is perfect, because, you know, my sister-in-law said the same thing. Like, she loves the Dead, but she doesn't really listen to them anymore. It's in terms of what her daily life is, she listens to a lot more upbeat music. She's gone in different directions, but it's a part of her life growing up with my father-in-law, who saw Jerry multiple times and traveled around with them a little bit. So for her, like you said, your mom said, it's a lot more fun. It's more upbeat. So she was really down with it. So I definitely think that, you know, what you said is coming to fruition on the road here on leg 3 of a national tour. You know, we're seeing the people in person and, you know, shaking their hand, giving them hugs and stuff. And, you know, I met a guy last night who's who traveled around with the Dead for 25 years. You know, he's been a Deadhead for 50 years, and he just walked up to me and said, "I just want to say thank you for keeping the music alive." And, you know, those are great, great experiences to have. And then to have them really fall in love with the original material that we mix in as well from our albums, and, you know, have them getting excited about that is a cool experience too. So it's been a lot of fun.
Let's talk a bit about the technical details of the record, because there are some shout outs that we definitely want to give.
Of course.
Stephen Marley and Marlon Asher and Fire on the Mountain. How did you hook up with Stephen? Is it just one of those musical relationships, and you being in the reggae rock scene, that you were able to convince Stephen to do this project?
It was an interesting chain of events. You know, the most integral piece to this whole puzzle and the record is Errol Brown, who we gave the opportunity to do you want to do an original record with us? And we showed him some original stuff we were working on. Or do you want to do this Grateful Dead concept? And he was like, "Man, I love this concept. This could be huge. I like these songs," you know, and he hadn't really delved too much in the Dead, but he really liked the songwriting that we showed him. So he wanted to do that. And obviously, you know, you may know his history, but for people that are listening that don't, you know, just put Errol Brown into all music, and he's not the performer, but he's the engineer and producer.
Right.
He did the last.
Not the hot chocolate Errol Brown, the other Errol Brown.
Exactly. I'm actually going to listen to him. I haven't listened to him yet. he engineered and produced and co-produced the last three Bob Marley albums and Peter Tosh Legalize It and so many classic songs, but also, you know, did a song with Revolution and stuff with Ziggy Marley. He just won his sixth or seventh Grammy Award for the last Ziggy Marley album. So he's always stayed current in terms of technology and artists that he works with. At 72 years old, he's not one of those old school guys that stays in the past. He's always thinking in the future, in the present. And he just said when we were in the studio making, you know, he brought out the best in us, and we tracked it in I think about 12 hour days, I believe, and then he mixed it 26 hours straight, and we just put a lot of love and blood, sweat, and tears into this record. And he was like, "Man," he's like, "we need some big artists on this track." I'm like, "Well, you've worked with the Marleys, like, is there anyone that you think would work on this?" And he's like, "Man, Stephen would be perfect for this track. He's, you know, we already have the Ganja Farmer on here. And Errol's point of view, Stephen's voice sounds really good with a rock and roll kind of feel." So he thought the tonality of his voice, you know, different than the rest of the brothers, would work good for the song. So we sent it over, and he actually loved it. He loved the vibe. He loved the horns, and he sent a bunch of like actual, you know, feedback on the song. And he said he was down, and we were down to the wire like months later. And, you know, obviously Stephen's busy. He's got a family. He's touring. He's recording. He's producing. He's throwing this festival we're playing at, Kaya Festival. So he's doing a lot of stuff. So we're down to the wire. We're about to mix the record. Like we're about to master it. And we're like, "Man, is this ever going to come?" And then it comes like 2 days before we're about to master the record. He nails it, throws in a freestyle verse at the end. Perfect timing. Couldn't have been better. And then he invited us to perform at his Kaya Festival, which we're headed out to do. I think it's April 28th and 29th in San Bernardino, California. So, you know, struck up a friendship in terms of Marlon Asher. I was in L.A. with John Phillips, who I mentioned earlier, and he hooked me up with this tribute to Peter Tosh, Legalize It session. And it was me, Marlon Asher, and Angelo Moore from Fishbone. And the hook had already been done by UB40. And so we were recording together, hanging out, sharing some smoke and stuff, and we struck up a relationship, and we sent him this track, and he was like, "Oh, hell yeah, like, I'm going to bring some fire to this. And he definitely did. So yeah, it's just kind of happened. And, it's a little surreal when you look back at it, when I listen to the track, cause it's one of my favorites for sure.
Haley Jane, is obviously from the Vermont area and is a up and comer in the scene. So I'm sure you've played with her on the road or seen her, and that song makes total sense for Haley.
Yeah. And we've shared the stage like in, Costa Rica at Jungle Jam and so many places, like you said. Yeah, it's good. She's awesome.
The Agrolites, I'm curious about that because you don't normally think of the Agrolites doing reggae music, so I'm curious about how they got involved.
Yeah, they took us on our first tour, like in 2011. Like, we had been touring prior to that, but they were the first band to kind of give us a shot and say, hey, you want to open up for us and go on tour? So we struck up a relationship with them, and we were jamming with them every night on stage and stuff, and Jesse, the front man, is like, I describe him as like the rock steady ska version of Sam Cooke. I mean, I learned so much stuff about being the front man of a band in that month period. And I always wanted to do a collaboration with him. And, John Phillips, helped facilitate that a little bit, cause he works with them, in a management capacity. And, Jesse was really stoked about it. And we actually arranged that song almost as a tribute to the Agrolites because it's got that ska rock steady feel. I was like, what would the Agrolites do with this song? It's basically what we asked ourselves in the studio. So we almost kind of designed it for them in a way. So that's kind of what that was about.
Fortunate Youth. Again, it's just another one of these collaborations that just make a ton of sense, right?
Totally. Yeah. We were in Virginia and I showed Dan Kelly the track and he was like, oh man, he's like, that's my favorite Dead song. Let's do it. You know?
Right.
And he's just a fun loving guy with a party personality, always hanging out with the fans. So it's definitely like the perfect song for him.
Melvin Seals, we talked about already, but it's hard to do any sort of Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia tribute without having him sprinkled all over the place. And the fact that he played with you before is great. And then, G Love on Ripple. I mean, that just makes a ton of sense, too.
Yeah, G Love is, he became a friend at Closer to the Sun, Slightly Stupid's Destination Festival in Mexico. We had some sushi together, had some drinks and stuff, had some mutual friends, and we ended up jamming late night. And then the next year or 2 years later, he invited me to play in his G-Love and Friends set where everybody just got together and jammed and had me on guitar. And it was just a lot of fun. And we stayed in touch ever since then. And this was actually one of his favorite Dead songs. So he was really stoked to be playing harmonica on it. And I feel like it added that we're kind of going for like a roots reggae meets the campfire, thing where we had everybody sing along at the end, like my wife and the engineers and stuff for the sing along at the end. So I love what he brought to it, the blues and the campfire feel.
You guys are touring this record, but as you mentioned, the tour is really about combining this record with Roots of Creation classic tunes or tunes that you're working out. And it's pretty much through the spring and into the summer with some festival dates, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's all about. It's the Grateful Dub Tour. And, when we're doing these club dates, it's pretty much, half of our material that's, people want to hear that's the classic stuff, or like you said, a couple songs we're working out that are new. And this record, and we've integrated some other songs like China Cat and West LA Fadeaway and other songs that aren't on the record that we're talking about maybe putting on, doing a volume two, since we had so much fun with this after we put out a new original record. And we have some festival dates where we're actually performing the record in its entirety and doing a Grateful Dub set at a Rise Music Festival in Colorado and Jerry Jam. And I believe at Sterling Stage, Amerabeat, we're doing that as well. So that's a lot of fun at festivals to actually, you know, perform the record in its entirety.
Cool, man. I really love the record, and if my mom loves the record, that's pretty cool. So thanks for it.
Mom approved.
Your mom approved. Yeah. So get it. And seriously, check if you haven't listened to it yet, you'll definitely want to check it out. Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this, and thanks for going into such great detail. It's a really cool record. I mean, I posted it yesterday on our Facebook channel, and I know a lot of people are checking it out. So, congratulations. Looking forward to more Roots of Creation music, but certainly Grateful Dub Volume 2 down the road too. So thanks for doing this today, and let's keep in touch, and we'll see you out in the road or something.
Totally. Yeah.
You're
up north, right?
Yeah, we're up north, but we come down south here and again, so who knows? Who knows what the future holds? But thanks for taking the time today, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for having us. We'll see you soon.
I mean, you can't ask for a more genuine discussion around the motivation to pay homage to the Grateful Dead than that. It's clear that this project was born organically and carried out with a ton of love. A love and authenticity that continues as Roots of Creation take the package on the road. For tour dates and more, visit rootsofcreation.com. To warm you up for the spring that will eventually get to the East Coast, here is a very cool version of Shakedown Street, aptly titled Shakedown Street Dub, featuring longtime Jerry Garcia collaborator Melvin Seals. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.
Osiris.